कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द जय जय गोराधा शिव सजीव.
The following is an evening darshan given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on December 24, 1982 at Murari Sevak Farm in Mulberry, Tennessee. The class begins with a reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, Chapter 7, Verse 140.
They used to criticize Lord Chaitanya. What type of a renounced person is Lord Chaitanya? He's singing and dancing. He should just be sitting down and reading books and not singing and dancing. As a sannyasi or someone who's in a renounced spiritual order, he should be very sober and simply sing and not sing and dance. But of course Lord Chaitanya explained to them that this is not ordinary singing and dancing. He's singing the names of Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You see, in that point, Lord Chaitanya, he explained to them,
Swarupa Aishwaryaitara Nahi Maya Gandha Sakalvedir Hoya Bhagavana Se Sambandha.
In his original form, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is full of transcendental opulences, which are free from the contamination of the material world. It is to be understood that in all Vedic literature, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate goal.
Tare nirvishesha kohi chitchakti namani artha sarupa namani le purnatha hoyahani.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. When we speak of the Supreme as impersonal, we deny His spiritual potencies. Logically, if you accept half of the truth, you cannot understand the whole. The purport, in the Upanishads it is said,
Purnam adaha purnam idang apurnat purnam udachyate purnasya purnamadaya purnam evavasishyate.
This verse, which is mentioned in the Isha Upanishad, Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad, and many other Upanishads, indicates that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is full in six opulences. His position is unique, for He possesses all riches, strength, influence, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. Brahman means the greatest, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is greater than the greatest. Just as the sun globe is greater than the sunshine, which is all-pervading in the universe. Although the sunshine that spreads all over the universes appears very great to the less knowledgeable, greater than the sunshine is the sun itself. Greater than the sun is the sun god. Similarly, impersonal Brahman is not the greatest, although it appears to be so. Impersonal Brahman is only the bodily effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the transcendental form of the Lord is greater than both the impersonal Brahman and localized Paramatma Supersoul. Therefore, whenever the word Brahman is used in Vedic literature, it is understood to refer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here, it's explained that although there are certain philosophers today in the West, it's very popular to believe in the Brahman or to believe that ultimately the Supreme Truth is just pure energy without any quality, without any variety, and that to realize that undifferentiated type of energy level as being the highest state of consciousness. Well, these verses confirm that such an energy or such a spiritual reality exists, and some philosophers and seekers of the truth are able to see that. But actually, that is just the That is just the first step, that actually to see Krishna, or to understand that that is just like the light coming from the sun, and Krishna is far beyond that. Actually, Krishna is far greater than that. This is something that should be understood. So then Lord Chaitanya went on to explain that Bhagavan prapti hetu je kore upai sravanadi bhakti Krishna praptir sahai. Translation: it is only by devotional service beginning with hearing that one can approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the only means to approach Him. Purport by Prabhupada is that Mayavadi impersonal philosophers are satisfied simply to understand Brahman to be the sum total of knowledge. But Vaishnava philosophers not only know in detail about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but also know how to approach Him directly. The method for this is described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as 9 kinds of devotional service beginning with hearing. One can directly approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead simply by executing the 9 kinds of devotional service, of which hearing about the Lord is the most important. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has very favorably stressed the importance of this process of hearing. According to this, to his method, if people are simply given a chance to hear about Krishna, certainly they will gradually develop their dormant awareness or love of Godhead. Sravanadi suddha chitte koraye udhoy. Love of God is dormant in everyone, but if one is given a chance to hear about the Lord, certainly that love develops. Our Krishna consciousness movement acts on this principle. We simply give people the chance to hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and give them prasad to eat. And the actual result is that all over the world people are responding to this process and becoming pure devotees of Lord Krishna. We open hundreds of centers all over the world just to give people in general a chance to hear about Krishna and accept Krishna's prasad. These 2 processes can be accepted by anyone, even a child that we've seen tonight. It doesn't matter whether one is poor or rich, learned or foolish, black or white, old or still a child. Anyone who simply hears about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and takes prasad is certainly elevated to the transcendental position of devotional service. So here the stress is given about hearing, that actually hearing and chanting, this is the basic activity of Krishna consciousness, that if we regularly hear about Krishna, if we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, and hear about Krishna, then it's very easy to just automatically make advancement in spiritual life. So that's why it's so important to live in a spiritual place where a person can regularly hear about Krishna from devotees. Even one time I saw Srila Prabhupada was sitting down and listening to one of his tapes. And then he saw that we were watching and he said that it's Krishna that is speaking through. So even to hear again, there's no harm. The point is, even Prabhupada would have different disciples speak. You speak. And he would listen. Actually, one in Vrindavan, they placed Prabhupada had the disciple sit even almost as high as he was. Even it might have been higher because the particular seat, the Bhagavatam, was very high. And Prabhupada said to respect the Bhagavatam, you don't lower the Bhagavatam, you raise the speaker. It's not that anything to do with someone was saying, well, he's higher than you. It's not that, Prabhupada said. The point is that it's for respecting the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam are the sacred books that glorify Krishna. Actually, there are temples in India just dedicated to the Bhagavatam. People put the Bhagavatam in an altar and they perform regular puja and arati to it instead of a deity. Sometimes you see that, you know, regularly I always find that someone puts the Bhagavatam just in a lower place where I'm sitting. But then after being in India so long, and plus, you know, seeing how Prabhupada would treat the Shastra, these books are actually like incarnations of God in book form. So we always keep them a little high out of respect, because it's by hearing the words that are recorded in these transcendental literatures that the consciousness becomes purified. The whole secret, Sravanadi Sudha Chitte Koraye Udoy, is that our consciousness is originally pure, but it's been covered. You see, just like if you have a window and it gets dirty, they have to clean it off. Mahaprabhu said, Cheta Darpanam Arjanam. You clean off the mirror of the consciousness by chanting Hare Krishna. So by this hearing process, the consciousness is actually cleansed. When the consciousness is cleansed, then the Sudha Chitte, or the pure consciousness, can again manifest itself. So it's very important to regularly hear the Bhagavatam. Bhagavata Nitya Sevaya. In fact, it's recommended that one should daily hear the Bhagavatam. By a daily practice of listening to the Bhagavatam, which is the literature especially glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then it's very easy for one to develop that spiritual awareness, because the spiritual awareness is within us. It's not something foreign. It's something that is always there within us. Simply it has to, the false identification, where we identify ourselves with this body, we identify ourselves with the things of the body, the byproducts of the body. This identification has to be transferred to where we identify ourselves as a pure spirit soul, and we identify ourselves as a servant or as the part of Krishna. You see, that we're part of the total absolute truth. It's not that we are independent. In the modern world, people are very attached to their, quote, independence, unquote. You see, they think that if they can wander in the forest naked or something, that somehow is some kind of freedom. Whether they're doing that, or whether they're running in the city, or whether they're going just whatever hits their mind, if they do it, still that's no freedom in the real sense. Everyone is dependent. Even in this world, we're dependent on air, we're dependent on light. Suddenly we're dependent on water, we're dependent on so many different things. It's not that we're independent. So ultimately, that dependence can be traced back to a dependence on God. So when one actually directly is dependent upon God, then one is independent of everything else, because everything is ultimately resting on Him. When you're directly under His shelter, or directing, resting on Krishna, then immediately you do become independent. But otherwise, it's simply a question of what the person is dependent upon. Either on one's material situation, on certain designations, on certain situations, on certain intoxications or crutches for the consciousness. Something is there that we learn to depend upon, and we try to get some strength from that. But unless it's Krishna, all those shelters are simply fallible soldiers which let us down in the ultimate issue. So the real thing is to develop our dependence upon Krishna, which is natural, and that is actual independence. Being a part of the total universal order, we cannot be completely independent. Neither we can separate ourselves and look apart at the whole thing in some objective way. We are a subjective part of the total universe, of the total creation. We're not in that complete objective, separate, aloof situation, nor can we ever attain such a vision. That's only illusion if we think so. The only person who's completely, absolutely independent of everything is Krishna. So if we're with Krishna, then we can get that similar viewpoint. Otherwise, there's no chance of actually seeing things in a detached way. So rather than all this type of philosophical speculation, the very advanced devotees of the Lord, they find that it's much more satisfying to develop simply one's love for Krishna. And that pure love for Krishna is what completely satisfies everyone. You see, actually, everything we're loving in this world is just a partial representation of Krishna. It's a very minute part. So actually, we're giving our love to so many things, but that reciprocation never comes to the extent that we actually would hope or which could actually satisfy us. The reciprocation can only be 10% fully given by Krishna. And even if someone may be satisfied well with whatever reciprocation one's getting in a particular material relationship, but the relationship is not permanent. It doesn't, even if we want to stay here, we can't. You see, sooner or later we have to leave this particular body. You see, even if they give us an artificial heart, an artificial liver, an artificial lung, an artificial, you know, everything. But just like there was some professional boxer was recently killed in Las Vegas a year ago or something like that. Maybe 6 months ago. I mean, within the year. I mean, I don't know the exact date. It was in the papers. So I read in one type of scientific magazine that they had you know, what happened was that inside his head, his brain had become like a sponge. He got hit with a punch that they calculated was over 1,000 pounds force. And it had just completely caused hemorrhaging and all that in his brain. So then, as a result, I mean, he died. But they had the machines. They have respiration machine and liver machine. They have everything. So even though his, technically speaking, his brain had completely stopped, it was disconnected from the rest of the body. It was all filled up with blood. So there was no more brain activity. The person was completely, you know, no longer able to perceive anything. Just like, even if you're in the body, but if you can't perceive anything. Like I went to the dentist yesterday. So the person gave a Novocaine shot, and he said that I'm giving it up here in the nerve. He gave me a little lesson. Actually, you're going to feel your nerves here on the tooth are actually feeling it. But when the impulse goes to your brain, because we've blocked it off here with Novocaine, your brain can't feel it. So that's why you don't feel any pain. So it's like that even if you're blocked off, even in his situation, if you can't perceive anything from the body, so they said that's technically death. You see. As soon as they turned off the respiration, even there you kept the heart beating for 3 days. But the brain was completely, there was no more impulse, there was no more electric wave, anything. That's what they describe nowadays as death. They turned off all the machines, he died. But up to that point, they had all the machines pumping and everything seemed to be going. Except they could see that in his brain there was no waves. In his brain, well at that point there were brains. Scrambled. So, this is the kind of situation that actually this body is a machine. You see, it can only take so much. You can only pound it with so many pounds force and pretty soon it stops functioning. Similarly, as long as we're trying to, just as there's a limit of how much pain you can take, there's also a limit how much pleasure you can get out of this body. You see, I know there's so many big singers and ex-singers, late singers, and that tried to get more and more happiness out of the body, they OD. They overdose in one thing or the next, and they die. Because there's a limit how much you can get out of this body. It doesn't go beyond that, you see. But we want more happiness than what this body could possibly give. So that real happiness that we're hankering for is Krishna. That real happiness lies beyond the body. That's why in trying to achieve that happiness, we'll kill the body. If we try through some kind of mechanical or chemical or whatever means. But if we try to achieve that happiness by chanting and hearing about Krishna, then automatically a person becomes purified and achieves that happiness. When one achieves that spiritual happiness, then one becomes satisfied. When one's satisfied, one could care less with everything that people say. So many people say, well, Why should I chant Hare Krishna? How will I know if I chant Hare Krishna that I'll be satisfied? Will I really be satisfied? So on and so forth. The point is that if a person, how will I know if I'm satisfied? They ask all these kind of foolish questions. If a person chanting Hare Krishna, and if he's satisfied, you don't have to, he doesn't have to ask someone else. Just that was, I'm not only today, but every day I'm given prasad. I don't have to ask someone else, am I full now? People would think, the person, what's wrong with him? You don't say, am I full now? What are you asking me for? You see, Bhagavad Gita says that there's the kshatagya. Goes into this. This is one of the points of the Vedanta Sutra, that the field and the knower of the field. That this body is a field. And we are the knower of the field. I know my body. Huh? Rajendranandan knows his body. Someone else knows their body. Like that. Everybody knows his own body, her own body. But if a mosquito lands on Vijayananandan's hand and bites him, I can say, watch out, there's a mosquito there, but I don't feel anything. But he feels it. You see, he'll feel it. If he's awake, he'll feel it. If he's not, he'll wake up. Probably. Right? So that way, each of us, we're conscious of our body, but Krishna is conscious of the whole universe. That's the real universal consciousness. So if we link up with Krishna, not that then all we become conscious of everyone's pain and pleasure in that sense, but at least we become in harmony with the Supreme Consciousness, and then our consciousness can also be rise above simply being conscious of the body, and we start to become actually spiritually aware. So then one can become a little detached from the body. The pain and pleasure of the body no longer is an absolute factor for one. It's just relative in its relative position. Because one has already achieved a higher happiness, a higher experience. And that one that satisfies, he doesn't have to ask someone else, am I satisfied? You know. That this is greater than anything I've experienced before. Recently, in this, you've seen the new book, Chant and Be Happy. That in that interview with George Harrison, he very boldly says what he feels about chanting Hare Krishna. He says that the greatest happiness he's ever experienced in his life, and he's tried everything, is through chanting Hare Krishna. You see, even though he's not a formal member of the Krishna conscious movement, in one sense, but he does chant every day 16 rounds, and he follows most of the principles, if not all of them, most of the time, if not all the time. We don't know. He's not under our surveillance or anything, but we know that basically he leads a pretty pure life, as far as I know. So, because of that, he's able to experience that happiness. So why not anyone else? So the whole way of opening the door, how did he start? He heard by hearing. If people just come and hear, everything can develop from there. There's a story about one thief. There's a group of thieves. They were escaping from the king's men. This is in ancient India. And one of them hid in one of the hermitages. The kings, the police, king's men, they went by looking around, and in the meantime, when he was hiding in the hermitage, there was a Bhagavatam class going on, and the speaker was talking about laws of karma, about how for every action we do, we have to accept the reaction, purpose of life. He was there just a few minutes. He listened while that class was going on. Then, when the police, or kings, whatever you want to call them, they went, then he ran off. But in that few minutes, that seed had been planted in his consciousness. He couldn't forget. And eventually, just from that short listening, he actually became a devotee. So, we cannot underestimate the power of hearing. Because the consciousness, it's covered. And if it hears enough, finally it starts to wake up. Just like a man in a coma. What do? They start calling his name. Hey Jeff, whatever his name is. And then they bring people that he knows until finally something clicks. And he can remember that I'm so-and-so, and yes, this is my sister, and this is my brother, and this is this. And then his remembrance comes back. So in the same way, it's like we're in a spiritual coma. We've forgotten our original relationship with Krishna, our sambandha. We forgot our original spiritual position. But by hearing, that remembrance comes back. And when finally we hear enough, and things start to make enough sense, just like a person hears enough, his name, this other name, that, he can draw in enough of a relation, then everything comes back. Like that, if a devotee is, he continues hearing, finally everything is revealed. And he remembers Krishna, and he remembers even his own original position. He can even know how he got into this material world, how he left the spiritual world, which is our original abode. This material world is dark. Now you look out, there's no light. It is basically dark. Well, the spiritual world is always lit. It's always light. You see. So part of that spiritual world is covered by cloud. And that cuts off all the light. And we're little bubbles in that cloud. That big cloud, there's so many little bubbles which are universes. And we're in that universe. So each universe is dark. If it wasn't for the sun, the universe would be completely dark. It is dark. It's only the sunlight that lights it up. So Krishna places the sun in the universe to create light. Otherwise, by nature, the universe is dark. But in the spiritual world, there's no need. Bhagavad Gita explains there's no need for electricity, sunlight, or moonlight. It's always ever effulgent. You see? So if we hear enough about Krishna, if we chant Hare Krishna, then we start to come back to our original spiritual position. That can never be taken away. In fact, one is told in the Vedas that what is actually the use, even if one gains the whole world, if one gains so many material things, because ultimately everything has to be lost in due course. And better than that is to even have one moment of a glimpse of the real truth. See, because by that, one can go on to actually achieve one's eternal position. See, even if one gets a slight association with real devotees, with real transcendentalists, that, and gets a little bit of a glimpse, a little bit of an idea that, oh, there is such a thing as absolute truth. There is such a thing as eternal existence. It actually has some direct relation to me. Even if one gets the slightest, even little glimpse in his mind, then from that is actually a greater benediction than even if the person had millions of dollars. Because by that one glimpse, that will again bring that person again and again to try to find out what is actually the real truth. What is the real purpose of life? It's so amazing that although all type of technological advances are being made in the Western world, so-called advances, for flying here and there, but nobody has any ultimate destination. No one has any ultimate idea that after death, what is our destination? That even what is the purpose of whole human civilization? Is it simply to become consumers for the new products created by the new industries? To produce newer and newer type of machines. Just like now we see the funny thing, at least it's funny to me, I don't know, I can share my thoughts with you, you can tell me. I'm seeing here, like in New Orleans in the morning, I saw so many women were jogging on the street to keep fit. And then you see they have all the machines to make life very comfortable. So what happens is they don't get any exercise, they have to jog and go to health spa to keep fit. And I was seeing in India that there, they don't have these machines. They have to wash their clothes by hand, and they take the spices. They don't buy any ready-made spice. They get the raw root, like turmeric, ginger, any kind of roots, or any type of spice. They take the raw spice, and then they grind it up by hammering it. But they're always in top fit condition. They never see them jogging down the road. But they're just, you know, getting a little exercise. And they're always fit, you know. But here, you got everything is, you know, buy it in the pack already, so they put all kind of, you know, chemicals in it anyway. But then everything is like ready-made. And so then you get, you know, flabby or you get, you know, out of bad health. So then you have to take, you know, some special exercise to get in fit or pay hundreds of dollars to join the health spa. So what's the advantage? It seemed kind of funny to me that for all our advancement, the more that people become even health conscious, they kind of just get back that the natural kind of a simple thinking, simple living, excuse me, and high thinking is a more natural way of life. Of course, if you take all the modern amenities to save time and use that time for engaging in spiritual life, because, well, I've saved some time, so now I can just go to the temple. It doesn't even cost anything like a health spa, and you can go and jump up and down in the temple before the deity. Well, that's transcendental, you see. So then, all right, if you want to use all the machines to save time, at least use your time to practice self-realization. But if they use, they make all the machines to save their time, and then use the time, then they go running so they can't to make up because they are all the, you know, it's just like, seems to me to be, doesn't matter whether you invent a machine or not. If they don't have any higher purpose of life, they're going to give out that much energy anyway, whether it's pounding the spice or whether it's running in the street. Otherwise, they have other problems come up. So the real thing is that if people become fixed in self-realization, then so much unnecessary things, so many unnecessary things can just be avoided and people can be actually happier. You know, so many people may be obsessed with various type of health theories, with various type of ideologies. But ultimately, if they're not leading one to real spiritual awareness, if they're just a different obsession with some mental or physical idea, and not actually leading one to real spiritual awareness, real spiritual realization, ultimately it's a waste of time. It's not something that one can take with one permanently. But real self-realization, you can never lose. Just like King Bharat, you see. He took his self-realization even with him, even after several births, two births. He could remember his previous lives and he didn't lose that spiritual awareness. You see. Although he made a few mistakes, nonetheless his spiritual practice had helped him. And ultimately he was successful in achieving God realization. So that's the actual purpose of human life. Not just to sit and invent so many machines to have an easier life, and then invent other machines that you can sit in your living room and run on a, you know, one of those moving belts. Because of all the other machines you invented saved so much output of energy that now to keep a good health, you have to make another machine to run. It's just, you know. What was the need of all the technological advancement? Just save time? For what? So then a person can just sit in front of the television and watch people getting murdered? No, the actual only practical purpose of having any of these machines if you use it for serving Krishna. Otherwise, there's no use at all. Actually, then the machines are simply disturbance. Then one might as well just lead in a simple life, chant Hare Krishna, you don't need anything. And if you're going to use the machines at all, use them somehow to help one to save more time to serve Krishna. Or to expand the service of Krishna to reach more people. Otherwise there's no advantage in just saving time or saving energy so that then one can sit around and drink beer or something and watch the football team smash their heads into each other and the sugar bowls and orange bowls and et cetera, et cetera. There's no advantage. So now everything is topsy-turvy. People, they work so hard to invent things to save their time, but then they don't know what to do with their time. They're all frustrated. So then they make up so many frivolous sports. They make up so many distractions, hoping that this will satisfy them. You see the people in the airplane. Some business guy, skinny guy, doesn't look like he's in very good shape. He's reading some sports magazine about some basketball guy, 7 foot tall. But you can see the guy's picture. He's looking at the picture, reading all the scams about the person, whether, you know, who's going to win the next game, this, that. What does it have to do with reality? What does it actually have to do anything with that person's real existence? Just they create just a distraction in their mind because they don't know what is the real thing that they should be using their spare energy on. In Bhagavatam it says that religion, real religion means that which is developing our taste, our hunger for hearing about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And any religion, quote, religion, in which one practices the religion, and that eagerness to know about God, about the Supreme Person, about the Absolute Truth, is not enhanced, is not created. That hunger, that taste, if it's not created, then that so-called religion is simply a waste of time. Srama eva hi kevalam. Simply a useless waste of energy. Nothing to show for it. The Krishna consciousness is so effective that if someone just regularly hears the message of Krishna, it cannot help but act. And it's not that it's brainwashing or something, that one is, somehow psychologically browbeat into some kind of... No, it's simply a natural thing. By hearing enough about one's eternal existence, about Krishna, things start to make sense. And one becomes so self-situated, self-confident, self-reliant, that one is no longer dependent on all the crutches that ordinary people relate to as being necessary for existence. Instead, one is rather depending on the Supreme Person and is actually working for the welfare of other living entities. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's the greatest welfare work. In most countries of the world, they appreciate that very much. Most countries of the world, people appreciate. I was on a radio in New Orleans just a week ago, 4 or 5 days ago, WGSO and WGEU-FM. And so, there someone asked, let's see, what did they ask? That here in America, why is there not that much of a broad acceptance of the Krishna conscious movement? Something like to that extent. And then I explained that in the Vedas there's a saying, Atmanam Manyate Jagat. As you think the whole world thinks. Just like when I go to Peru or South America, I don't even go through customs or immigration. They just take the passport and they take me to the VIP lounge. All over the world, the Krishna conscious preachers are accepted. But here in America, anything, although this is freedom of religion and everything, open-minded, but the people are so, I don't even call it conservative or whatever, that anything that's a little bit out of the ordinary, there's such a type of lack of any kind of acceptance that they're thinking, well, this Hare Krishna, this is something. But actually, it's only not even in America. Like you go to New York, there's a very broad acceptance of the Hare Krishna movement. You go in Los Angeles, 200,000 people go to our Rath Yatra. Even it's just a question of a certain number of certain class of people. They have got maybe the media has got some inhibition. And they're projecting this idea as representing the whole public. Or they're presenting this idea to the public and trying to create that kind of an opinion. And actually misrepresenting what is the actual purpose or what is the actual nature of this movement. Instead of actually broadcasting what we're standing for, what we're doing, they broadcast what they feel is the opinion of the public or should be the opinion of the public in regard to a Eastern culture being preached in America. So this is the basic problem, is that people, they just create some kind of opinion and then they want to project that everybody thinks the same way. But actually it's not that. And in fact, even in political or in other ways, America should see that the way they think, the rest of the world doesn't happen to think that way in every case. So similarly, the way that some Americans think about the Hare Krishna movement is not the way that the whole world thinks about the Hare Krishna movement. In fact, the British government just held the Year of India in Britain, and the Hare Krishna movement was hand in hand with the British government and the British government magazines and everything. Part of their, one of the authorized Indian cultural extensions. It's just that America, I don't think they know much about Indian culture, Indian religion, or Indian spiritual movements. So they don't know how to weed the chaff from the rice. Anyway, these are just questions that came up, but generally the public, even after he said that, the public started calling in. One lady said, I have a picture of Krishna dancing on a snake. Many-headed snake. What is the meaning of this picture? It has on it, written on the bottom, a word K-A-L-I-Y-A. Then I explained Kaliya Krishna pastimes. Many people were calling. Actually, it's a very favorable radio show. Just he asked that one question because that's his business, to create some kind of... Actually, if people simply hear what really we stand for instead of hearing what the media presents as their opinion, if they just hear about Krishna, then they'll become purified. They'll become purified. That's so nice. In Italy, they have made, just in a short time, about 600 or 450, 600 devotees. They have 8 radio shows, 8 radio stations throughout the country. They have radio stations. Anywhere in the country, you can turn your radio on and listen to the Hare Krishna movement 24 hours a day. That's what we need. Simply let people hear about Krishna. I was saying, actually, so we should have our own radio station in the future. I was suggesting to some different devotees. Of course, we have other problems maybe initially. People can just start to listen about Krishna. If they hear enough about Krishna, they become purified. That's the only... Actually, right now there's radio waves going right through your body. It's one thing, you turn on your radio, even if you cover it up with your body, it's still going out. All these waves are going through the ether. They're going everywhere. But the vibrations are all mundane, completely mundane vibrations. And so those are, who knows what effect those are having on us. One man was fixing an FM station. I don't know, I heard this from, because we have our shortwave radio we're installing. And then by accident, the guy turned the switch on the antenna. They have to turn off. And the FM waves coming off that antenna fried the person just like a microwave oven. He died instantly. So if those radio waves are so powerful that by, 5,000 watt radio wave, you just stand right by the antenna, if it can kill you instantly, but then the whole world is being scattered by these waves. What is the long-term result of having these waves going through our bodies? Who knows, right? What do you think, Bhakti Ran?
What do you think?
So at least if the vibrations are Krishna vibrations, right, then it will purify the atmosphere. Instead, we're getting all these vibrations. Who knows what it's doing to us? And we're not even getting any spiritual benefit out of it. So anyway, that's why give hearing about Krishna a chance. Try hearing about Krishna. Try understanding about Krishna and oneself. Give it a chance. And if one can achieve any peace or happiness out of it, well, that's the best bargain you could ever get. Just by hearing, if you get your permanent happiness and peace, there's nothing better than that.